Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of No Filter Sports Podcast with yours truly, Bob Bage, Danny McClain, and not with Eli Zarrett, the founder of this program today. He's enjoying a vacation up north with his family, that nebulous region of Michigan we all call up north, and I hope he's having a great time up there. Danny is going to introduce our special guest and guest host on the show shortly, but I wanted to say that on Monday, I had to grab the reins to lead off the show, even with Eli here, because of the latest Danny McClain hustle. It was the first thing I saw that morning when I opened my Twitter account. You can now pay to have a Zoom chat privately with Danny and perhaps Pete Rose, though Danny said he did not know what they're going to charge. Tuesday morning, Danny, one of the first tweets I saw when I opened my account. Danny's doubleheader deal of the week. Get a COVID-19 mask and an autographed T-shirt for just $20. Now, Danny, I want you to tell everybody what this COVID-19 mask is, because I think it's really cool. I ask you to send me one, and of course, you dropped the ball. Go ahead. Tell folks about that.
Well, Bob, it's cost $20, so send the money.
You owe for me?
Bottom line, it's our website. That's all it is our website. We just got it back up after sitting on it with this pandemic that's been going on. So that's essentially what it is. It's the website, and we're letting people know what we have, what we've got available. It's not only my items and my inventory. It's a lot of players that we have crossed our paths with in my lifetime. And there's a lot of great autographs from a lot of great people.
Yeah, it's first thing I saw Wednesday too. Now, here's a great new item from Danny. Autographed baseball featuring music highlights, including his two albums for, well, man, I'm telling you.
You know what, though?
Las Vegas shows?
I don't operate the website. Other people do.
Yeah,
other
I can tell. People, somebody you know, wrote this. So, right. Yeah. Know, I, All right.
I don't
now,
control what they write.
Would you introduce
one of my best friends in the world for the last, how many years, Fred? 80, 100, 110? Fred Heumann, the one and only.
At least that.
And why don't you come back to Detroit? We don't have very many professionals here anymore.
Not my call, Danny. Tell people I'm available.
Well, we really enjoy you being with us today. We'll have a great time. We got a lot of stuff to talk about at the back of the show, talking about MSU and all the things going on in Lansing, and a whole bunch of stuff here to start today with no other than the latest phenom that has joined the Detroit Tigers, Mr. Mize, who made his debut last night. Mr. Mize was let me start with this. And please, I'm not taking a cheap shot here at anybody. But every pitcher who's gone out there this year hasn't gone more than four innings, okay? Four and a third, four and two-thirds. Not one negative word about him only pitching four and a third innings last night. But everybody else gets their ass ripped. I don't understand. Casey Mize, I think, never realized how good and how fast and how quick major league pitchers are. So now he's going to have a period of time in order to start catching up with the window and catching up with the speed of the game. Not only running the bases, but how quick they can swing a bat. Listen, in college, he won a lot of games. You know why? Because he threw a lot of curveballs, a lot of sliders, a lot of changeups. And those guys can't handle that because they haven't had the experience. These guys set him up by the third or fourth inning so they could sit on his garbage that he was throwing up there. I'm talking about his little slider, his little changeup, his little curveball. He has pretty good curveball.
Well, his out pitch is a forkball. It's a split finger, Danny, and the guy struck out seven finger, and walked nobody.
Split finger and a forkball are the same pitch.
Yes, they are.
And the bottom line is he did not throw to good spots. He didn't hit good spots, but we're gonna blame it all on the anxiousness of the moment, the anxiety, the uptightness, the intimidation, and we'll see what happens to him over the next couple starts. I don't know how many more starts he'll probably get. Maybe a half.
Yeah, guys, I thought he pitched pretty well, and I thought that split finger was really effective, and he has a strikeout pitch. Okay, a lot of guys don't even have a strikeout pitch.
You're wrong.
He has a strikeout pitch. You saw it at one point, the big slugger. The Abreu, he struck out and he kind of nodded his head at him like, yeah, kid, that's pretty good stuff. Of course, he also hit a home run. But I did think of you this morning, Danny, knowing I was coming on. This guy is being treated like the next thing since Danny McClain, and he went four and a third innings. How baseball has changed, how we praise guys for going four and a third innings. Don't get me started on pitch counts. I understand it's the new wave of baseball. I thought the guy showed poise. I thought he had an out pitch, but I'm not ready to anoint him as the next Don Drysdale because he went 4 1/3 innings.
Well, Fred, I think your perception is colored by what we all saw, and that was the Detroit Tigers homer broadcast with Matt Shepard and Jack Morris, especially the pregame show. I loved it. They had some very tough questions for the kid's father. Jack Morris asked him, so – did you guys drive up from Alabama or did you fly up? I mean, it's just, you know, so we're seeing the kid throw 94, 95, which is a good major league fastball. It's got some movement on it too. But Jack was apologizing. And he says, well, you know, it may be 94, but it doesn't look like 94 coming up there.
Yeah. I don't know what Jack, you know, and I don't know what Jack meant by the it doesn't look like a fastball. 94 mile an hour in the major leagues is a very, very average fastball, guys.
Now it is, yeah.
What I was surprised about was the lack of velocity. I thought he was in the upper 90s. That's what I was told when I saw him pitch the one time, I thought he threw the ball harder than 92, 93 miles an hour. But apparently he doesn't. You know, there's a couple of other things. If he's only going to throw 35 to 40% fastballs, he won't last in this league. I can tell you that. If you don't set your pitches up with a good fastball, you will not be able to set up anything else. By the time the third and fourth inning rolled around, I'm say this again, they had him set up to throw the garbage, and he started hanging everything, and bang, 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 he was out of the ball game. So,
you know, Brandon wants to say something, and what I want to say before we get to Brandon is, Danny, I don't think you're right in referring to this kid's stuff as, quote, garbage. I think he's got some very
I call sliders, curveballs, changeups, all garbage. That's what I call them.
Brandon, what do you got?
It's not that they aren't good.
No, I think you're being too tough on him there, Danny. I think you're being too tough on him. I didn't see any garbage.
No, you guys are missing my point.
I thought he threw pretty well.
You guys are missing my point. I've always called curveballs, sliders, and changeups garbage. That's what they are. They're the off-speed pitches. They're not the good fastballs,
I know what you
the
mean,
singers,
Danny.
The wingers.
Denny, you're looking for more of a 60, 70% fastball in your
yes.
In your arsenal. But I don't know. Personally, I'm ecstatic to see this kid, Casey Mize. Yes, he was throwing 92-mile-per-hour fastballs, but he's been gunned at 97. And this is just... It's a bigger picture for me. This is Fred mentioned, you know, the most ballyhooed pitcher since Denny McClain, but it's obvious that it's the most ballyhooed pitcher since Justin Verlander, and that one worked out pretty well. I think the biggest thing though is people are kind of seeing Scooble come up. They're seeing Mize come up. They're seeing Riley Green, Matt Manning, Spencer Torkelson, Isaac Paredes, Daz Cameron, Alex Fado, all of them under 25 years old. And it's looking like, hey, the future's bright, and this is just the start of a new chapter.
So no, we don't know that, Brandon.
I think it is, personally.
Number one, we don't know if it's going to be bright, but I hope so. I hope we have a pitching staff. They got to build around something, and the other parts of the ball club are not buildable at this point in time. And if you think Riley's going to be a sensational player, I got something you can smoke tomorrow, and I'll give it to you free.
You don't know that
and
either,
then,
Danny.
And then the other thing.
One mistake when you were watching the kid.
You are wrong. Bob, just zip it. Well, you haven't seen him
no,
play.
No, you zip it.
Just stop it.
You just think you're
you
full
know,
of it.
And every time they turned around, the broadcasters, as Bob likes to pick on all the time, they were calling the White Sox the hottest hitters in the major leagues. Let me tell you why they are. Because they were getting pitches down the middle of the plate. You'd be a good
Well, wait a minute, Danny. I was going to say earlier, I think that White Sox club and that lineup, that's a tough place to start.
Oh,
I think this
it.
White Sox lineup is potentially a World Series lineup. They got six stars and four potential superstars in that lineup. I'm telling you, you talk about a bright future. One of the reasons Abreu upped for 5 years is because he saw the talent around him. And I go back to Brandon's point about the future is bright and Bob's point about local broadcasters. People here are thirsting for the Tigers to have a future. The last All-Star they developed other than a pitcher was Travis Fryman. That was 1,000 years ago. So, yeah, we hope Riley Green's the real deal. We hope the number one draft choice is the real deal. We hope all these pitchers are the real deal. But we don't know because the Tigers haven't produced the real deal since Verlander, right?
Yes. And did you see the graphic on the game last night? As Wednesday night, as we taped this Thursday morning. It said that Casey Mize is the second top pick overall in the MLB draft to actually make the major leagues since 2013. 7 years, only two top picks overall have been able to make the major leagues. It's a crapshoot. You don't know about any of these guys yet, but I liked what I saw from Mize last night.
I'm so glad you guys are thrilled. I'm so glad you're peeing all over yourself this morning with such anxiety and hilariousness and ridiculousness. Let me tell you something. You make hot hitters with bad pitches, and he made a lot of bad pitches. If you really want to be honest and frank, go back and look at the game, you three.
The White Sox are chewing up everybody, Denny.
Bob, just stop. Stop it. Let's be honest. They rip everybody else coming out there and pitching four innings, and you would think he'd won five Cy Youngs by the end of the four and a third. Freddie hit it first. Freddie's the one that knocked it out of the ballpark first. Bottom line is, listen, he's got it over with. That's the biggest thing. The game is over with. Now let's see if he settles down and starts to make better pitches. But 97, listen, I don't remember anybody ever telling me he threw the ball in the high 90s. Not once, unless they got a bad gun.
Of course, Tuesday night we saw Tariq Skubal make his debut, which was not impressive, knocked out of the second inning. We don't know.
You don't want to hear what I got to say about that.
I do. So say it right now, because I got a real good question coming up for all you guys. Say it right now, Denny.
I can't believe you guys are giving hell for a debut. I mean, we're talking about a debut.
Right. That's exactly what I was going to say, Brandon. That was his debut also. And you know what? I think that the left-hander the other night, I think he's got good stuff. Somebody's just got to work with him. That's all. He reminded me a lot of Lolich in the beginning of the ballgame at first. But
Wait a minute.
I think he's really got good stuff.
What did you see on the left-hander that reminded you of Mickey Lolich?
When he kept the ball down, his ball moved as much as Mickey's did when Mickey was at his best. The ball really moved when he kept the ball down around the knees. When he came up, it was, you know, a home run derby thing.
Senator, I knew Mickey Lolich. Tariq Skubal is no Mickey Lolich.
You watch.
And please, let's also, as Fred pointed out, let's also remember this White Sox team has Tim Anderson, Luis Robert, it has Yoan Moncada, it has Yasmani Grandal and Eloy Jimenez. It's got Abreu. It's got Cy Young winners like Dallas Keuchel and hell, even that new kid last night. He didn't look too bad. He matched Casey Mize pitch.
Yeah,
for pitch.
Dunning. Boy, he was pretty good pitcher. The third inning, he looked like Cy Young in his prime.
So even though we're saying the Tigers
White
have a bright future.
Are loaded. I'm White telling Sox you, the too. White Sox are loaded. They have a great lineup. You watch how this plays out, even over 2 months. They're a potential World Series team if they get any pitching. They are really good.
I'm going to say this one last time. If you throw 38% fastballs like they hit up the stat. Oh, Bob, stop it. For God's sakes, go
you
pee again.
Stop it.
Bottom line is 38% fastballs, you won't win very many games.
Okay, here's my big question. It's a two-part
question.
That's
what you threw. What they always talk about, Denny throwing the high hard one. That's what you lived on.
I threw 80%.
The high hard one.
80% I threw. Guess who told me that? Frank Larry. He was the first guy that ever said. He said, "Just keep throwing the fastball. You'll win a lot of games." Guess what? He was right.
Okay, here's my two-part question. If I can finally get this in, Friday afternoon, Al Avila appeared on the MLB radio network and was asked about Mize and these kids.
He said he was in the federal witness protection program.
They're just not ready. They're just not ready right now. We don't want to rush them. We want to give them some more time. Monday, they're all called up. A, what happened between Friday and Monday that all of a sudden they were ready? And B, do you think it's possible that Chris Illich went to Avila and said, "Bring them up now. I'm tired of this"?
Absolutely.
We're in a postseason that has 16 teams this year. The Tigers were potentially in that playoff. So, bring those kids up. That's what it's all about.
I would have pulled the trigger longer. When I thought I was doing this show the other day, I wrote in my notes, let's talk about what are they waiting for? Why don't they bring these kids up? This was the day they ended up bringing them up. I think they waited too long. I'd have the number one draft pick. He'd be my third baseman. I'd have all these kids up. If you're going to sell this mediocrity to the public the way they've sold now for 20 years, why not lose with the kids while they're learning on the job? Who wants to see they finally let go of Dawell Lugo and finally the kid they just moved, Candelario, is starting to hit a little bit. I'm not willing to give up on him, but you know, they had Jordy Mercer on this team 2 weeks ago. I mean, why are they playing these guys, and why are these kids that have so much promise playing inter-squad games in Toledo? That's not developing them. I'd have them all in the major leagues. I'd bring them all out. I'd bring up Riley Green and all of them.
I think you're sharing exactly what we've been saying since the beginning of the season. But me, Bob, and Eli, we just couldn't believe they weren't bringing them up and let them get in inside the environment, get the feel. The biggest thing they have to learn what the game is all about is the speed of the game, the speed, how fast they can swing a bat, how quick they can get around on a fastball inside, how quick they can go from first to third. All of those things really, really make a difference. But that takes time to realize and understand how quick this game is.
And the thing that, again, that I think we have to realize is that while all of us agree on this, and Al Avila did not, Chris Illich apparently agreed with us and made the command. Now, they actually had, they had video with Chris Illich on the Wednesday night game, you know, welcoming Casey Mize to the big leagues. I've never met Chris Illich in my life, though I was close to Mike at one time.
He doesn't like you.
Chris, I don't care. Chris, I want to tell you one thing, buddy. You need to lie low, okay? Because already people are looking at you like, what has this young guy done to deserve running the Detroit Tigers and the Detroit Red Wings? It's daddy's money, okay? And you actually answer to your mother still, Chris. So just lie low. Let's see how this works out. Because people are going to be clamoring, as Denny McClain on this program has for some time, for you to sell these teams if it doesn't work out. Because it's going to be your fault as the head of the show, apparently.
Well, I thought Avila and Illich were in the witness protection program at one time. It was good to see him on video, but nothing else.
All the money he's paying Spencer Torkelson, you think he wants to pay him that money to hit, play in his squad games in Toledo? Are you kidding me? Doesn't make sense either.
Bring the kid up.
Let him play
now. Damn right, Freddie.
Why is baseball so different? In other sports, they go from college campuses to play basketball and move right into the NBA. They go from college football fields and they're ready to go right into the NFL. Why? I know baseball has a minor league system, but if Spencer Torkelson can hit in that league on that team and that program like he did in college, why can't he come up and hit major league pitching? And so what if he strikes out three times a game? You know, often I want to see him play here. They're paying him all that money. Instead, you're going to give me Candelario and Dowell Lugo and all these guys playing in the infield. Bring him up now.
Well, Fred, there's one thing. Let me say, to be fair to all of these guys that get in the NFL and basketball, hockey, what have you, it really does take a good solid year or two till you realize how majestic and quick the game is, all of the games. And nobody really comes out of college and is a superstar the first year. Yes, you've got the exceptions. It happens once in a while. But you don't have the majority of these guys who come. They come, and it takes them a time to get used to the environment. And really, again, I go back to what I said earlier. It's the speed of the games. That's what the difference is between college. And this kid had a terrific record in college. I now know why, because he kept throwing curveballs and sliders and changeups. I mean, those kids in college can't hit a
break. You know, Danny, if there were a minor league season this year, I might buy that. But you're playing intra-squad games in Toledo. This season, 2020, is unique unlike any other. And as long as there's no minor league season and you're not getting seasoning, playing other teams and competition every night, and you're just throwing inter-squad games in Toledo, why not bring him up here for 2 months? And then you find out if he's not ready, maybe he doesn't go north next year. But in this season, I'd have him up right now.
This note, Freddie, C.J. Cron, whom they paid, what, $6 million for, looking pretty good with home runs at least, he gets hurt. They got an opening at first base. Duh, what a no-brainer. Get the kid up from Toledo. I want to tell you folks that Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies is a longstanding Red Shovel Network supporter and a great supporter of ours. He's served so many of our listeners very well by creating financial plans, business plans, and trust form. Now, whether it's planning for future family obligations or your own retirement, why not let Luke develop a comprehensive plan for you? He's got decades of experience, a big track record of success in creating custom solutions for your businesses or for individuals just like you. You call him, here's the number, 248-663-4748. Luke's going to set up a complimentary consultation. You sit down with him, doesn't cost you a dime, ask him anything you want, then just let Luke do his thing by laying out a plan that fits your individual needs. He's ethical, knowledgeable, caring. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, the number again, 248-663-4748. And I want to tell you about Hall Financial as well. Did you know that, I'm sure you do, interest rates are at a dramatic record low now on mortgages? interest rates in general too. And that should encourage most anybody to take advantage of this before it's too late. Is it time to refinance your home right now? You can't do better than with David Hall Mortgage. David's been a part of the greater Detroit community for over three decades. He built his business and has maintained his leadership in the mortgage market by consistently offering better options and more personal attention to thousands of satisfied clients. Hall Financial has also provided the fastest service in the business, generally in three or fewer weeks. And all this has enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners. So go to David Hall Mortgage to get started. You can call him. Think you can remember this? 248-308-5000. DavidHallMortgage.com. Hall Financial. Lower payments, better options, more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
I got a question for you guys. Now, listen, one of the best parts about producing this show is I learned so much about former players. I learned so much about the media. I learn about the past, and I learn so much about the sports history, not just in Detroit, but in Michigan itself. Yeah. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I have never seen a broadcast with a Mr. Fred Heumann before. I do know
really?
That Mr. Fred Heumann...
You're not missing anything.
Hold on. I do know that a Mr. Fred Heumann is verified on Twitter, which is, hey, that goes a long way.
Yeah.
I also know, by doing a little bit of research, you got some controversy to you here, Fred. Now, when you Google your name, a lot of mystery pops up. A lot of headlines like, Fred Heumann out at WLNS. Why? So I was just wondering if
I think everybody knows why.
If you could take me through your career and just kind of explain where it is that you broadcasted from and maybe where the last place you were at.
Well, I was at WLNS TV6 for 17 years here, and unceremoniously I was called in and fired in October 2nd, nearly a year ago, for some questionable pictures that were hidden on my internet, not pornographic, nothing lewd, just some honey shots. And my translation is, they looked at my salary, they looked at my age, and they said, let's give this guy the Ziggy, because it was a corporate call. It wasn't made by anyone in-house. But it was reminded, it's funny you brought that up. I'm not trying to divert the attention from myself, but I was going to start this segment by saying, how would you like to be Tom Brenneman this morning?
Oh,
did you hear
boy.
What happened to Tom Brenneman
we'll get to that
yesterday?
We'll get to that in a second. I don't know if this is a friend of yours or what, but I think this is pretty typical of the way people in mid-Michigan feel, Freddie. Tim Golgan, is that his name? And he tweeted me this morning, and he said, Fred got done dirty by WLNS. Hope he's doing well. Are you suing?
There was Fred. Some legal action that's still in litigation. So that's where I'm going to leave it.
Okay, fine. Let's go to Tom Brenneman then.
Yeah, let's go to Tom.
Fred, of course, was also Fred was a reporter at Channel 4 in Detroit for a long time, too. So you go back a long ways with the Tigers and went to Central Michigan University. I want to talk about that later on the program with you, because we hardly ever mentioned Central or the other Michigans like to do that. But yeah, let's go to Brenneman, because that's the big story. Brandon, you got something?
Tom Brenneman, early in the Reds broadcast, got popped saying these words.
One of the fag capitals of the world.
So he used a gay slur. And the unfortunate thing that came following this, I think, was his apology, because it ended up being one of these crazy apologies during a home run.
I pride myself and think of myself as a man of faith. As there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos, it will be a home run. And so that'll make it a 4-0 ball game. I don't know if I'm going to be putting on this headset again. I don't know if it's going to be for the Reds. I don't know if it's going to be for my bosses at Fox. I want to apologize.
So, yeah, he's very sorry.
So let me say this, okay? The Cincinnati Reds then released a statement. The Reds organization is devastated by the horrific homophobic remark made earlier this evening by Tom Brenneman. Brenneman goes on to say, Curt Schilling, and I do not agree with Curt Schilling on most of his political philosophies, tweeted this morning, quote, in today's cancel culture, I'm expecting an insane overreaction to this mistake. I can tell you that Tom Brenneman is one of the nicest and most thoughtful men I've ever known. His father, Marty's the very same. I mean, come on. They should have called him in and said, you were an idiot. When did you learn? Don't ever say anything because the microphone could be open. You never know. And you know what, Tom? You shouldn't have done that. It was ridiculous. You're suspended a game and we'll see you over the weekend. They're going to try, the PC people are going to try to destroy this guy for using a word that so many people use. And I wonder, again, how many gay people and lesbians who may have been watching were just shocked and outraged by this. Come on, lighten up.
Yeah, but what did we learn long ago, Bob? And I would never defend his actions, but we learned long ago, I being in television, that any mic you have on your lapel or in your hand is considered hot, whether you're on the air or not. So you don't make sexist comments. You don't make gay slurs. You don't say anything with a mic with anything in your range that could get you in trouble. And I do think there will be an overreaction to this. I think he'll get fired. The question is, will Fox, I forgot his association with Fox, he's worked there 27 years, will they jump on the bandwagon and fire him too, even though he wasn't working for them at the time? To me, that would be a severe overreaction. But in this world, and I know better than anybody, in this world, in this society, it is an oversensitive, crazy world, and Kurt Schilling's right. They're going to overreact to this, and I don't think a guy should lose his job, his livelihood, and his reputation over one bad 10-second
ball.
I just don't think he should, and yet I think he will.
Hang on a minute. What would you like them to do? Buy him a new car? Come on!
I just said suspend him a game and bring him back. Suspend him a game and bring him back.
Suspend him one game.
Yes, one game.
In this society that we live in right now, are you kidding?
That's different.
He's gone. He's going to get. No matter who he's hooked up with, he's going to get fired. No.
Okay. So did you guys see what happened about the hot mic issue?
Yeah.
Sure. Did you guys see? And I hope he gets picked up by somebody else. He should. Although I don't particularly like his stuff. You see what happened the other day to Michigan Governor Christine Whitmer? She's at the Democratic National Convention, and they bring up something I didn't know about, a shark attack. And she drops, because her mic was live and she didn't know it, she drops an MF bomb on television with her mic. And I don't think anybody's petitioning now for her to be recalled in the state of Michigan.
Well, Bob, she just, you know, like, have you ever used that expletive, Bob?
Of course.
You haven't used it in about 25 minutes. But on the other hand,
it's not just Shark Week.
She didn't point that at anybody. That had nothing to do. She made a little mistake. She was stunned a little bit, and she made a boo-boo word. But that's okay.
I got no problem with it. I don't care.
I agree. The language in our society has gotten so loose. I
mean, yeah, but Bob, to your point, just said that everybody's heard that term that Tom Brenneman used. Okay, that doesn't mean that he can use it on an open mic, even though he didn't know it was open. So how is that any different than what happened yesterday with her? We've all heard that term. We've all heard that adjective before, but that doesn't mean you can say it in an open mic. And if you do, you're going to suffer the consequences. That's the world we live in. I tend to agree with you. I think there's an overreaction to everything. But that's just what I'm saying.
What I'm saying is I don't care. I don't see Christine Whitmer being suspended for the rest of the season for dropping an MF bomb in a live
Gretchen.
Mic.
It's Gretchen.
Lighten
Whitmer.
Up, folks.
Her name's Gretchen.
By the way, her first name is Gretchen.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to Christine Whitman, the New Jersey governor, all those years.
And I'll just give you one example. I was up in Houghton Lake yesterday, and I was having lunch, and we were sitting about, I don't know, 8 or 10 feet from a table with three women and two guys. And we heard the F word, the guy I was with yesterday, I'll bet no less than 12, 15 times in an hour while we were having lunch. So that's what I mean by the language is so free and spraying everywhere today. It's just... it's crazy. Just crazy. Whatever happened to the word respect?
Well, a hot mic.
I don't want to hear the word when I'm eating lunch.
A hot mic might be one thing, but what about a hot tweet? What about a misspelling? Because we've just seen the Charlotte Hornets radio announcer. His name is John Fokey.
Yep.
He accidentally was tweeting about an NBA game. I believe it was the Utah Jazz and the Denver Nuggets. And somehow that word nuggets turned into the N-word when he tweeted it out. Now, I don't think that this guy did this on purpose. No one wants to lose their job because of a tweet like this. And so there's really no reason why he would do this. This is a guy who, by all accounts, is not a racist. He's worked very hard to get this dream job of his as the announcer of the Charlotte Hornets. and he's worked at the WNBA. Well, now he has been suspended for a tweet like this. Do you think when you accidentally do something like this that you should never be able to work again?
I think it should read. I can tell you what happened. The computer that he was on has the correction application on it, and so he missed the letter, one or two letters, hit the letters next to those letters that made it a bad word, and the computer corrected it to show the word that he wound up sending in a tweet.
And he didn't proof it.
He didn't proof. He didn't read it before he sent it.
That's a big problem. You know, we had a situation just a few years ago. I don't know if it was Venus or Serena. They were playing a match, and an ESPN commentator, not a famous one, referred to the fact that she was using, you know, stealth tennis to surprise her opponent, and he called it guerrilla tactics, as in the Spanish word, guerrilla. It came out guerrilla, like a slang term, a racist term against African-Americans, and ESPN gutlessly fired him. So there's just way too much oversensitivity to this stuff.
It really is.
Everybody has a bad day and a bad moment. And while while they should pay a price, I do think you got to give Brenneman more than one game, Bob, maybe the rest of the season. You have to take action, but I don't think you should use your livelihood and your career and everything you've spent your life dedicating yourself to over a 10-second slip up. I'm sorry. I just don't think you should pay that kind of price.
Amen to that. Now, we got another controversy in baseball. I want to hear your thoughts on this. And you know what this is. This is Tatis's grand slam on a 3-0 count against the Rangers this week. We really stirred it up. My take on it was, the game was out of control. My take on it was the kid missed a take sign. That's what everybody said. He just missed a take sign.
No,
it happens in baseball. That's what everybody said, Denny. Was he supposed to try not to hit a home run?
Fred, when you're ahead in a ball game like they were, they're not going to give anybody a take sign. They want to get, believe it or not, and you being a minor league umpire or some kind of an umpire, went high school or something. Bottom line is, didn't you want to get the game over when the game was 13-0 or 13-3? That's what they wanted to do. They were trying to get the game over. And this is like batting practice, 3-2, bases loaded and way ahead in the game. Bang. That's all it was.
Well, you're downplaying it.
I don't know if he missed the take sign or he ignored it.
He didn't miss anything.
Did he miss the take sign or did he ignore it? But I think that's a little bit of the problem with baseball right now is they're making a big deal out of this. This is one of the bright young players in the game. Maybe next to Mike Trout, the best player in the game. And so what if he hit a grand slam score was whatever it was, even if it was 21-0? What's he supposed to do? Try to pop out to the shortstop? Give me a break.
Exactly.
And again, if you're going to throw the ball down the middle, shame on you.
What do you guys think about these unwritten rules?
Depends what they are, Brandon. Depends which
Well, which ones
rules.
Do you agree with and which ones do you think?
Well, there are too
stupid.
Many unwritten rules in all sports to go through.
Well, we're talking baseball right now. What exactly unwritten rules? You mean the 3-0 pitch?
Yeah, you know more than all of us, so go ahead and tell us what you feel are the good unwritten rules, Denny, and which ones are the terrible unwritten rules. Because I can tell you right now, not seeing a grand slam, that's silly. Give me that grand slam all day long. Give me them fantasy points on my baseball team, too. I love it.
And then if you notice, as if to rub it in everybody's face, the next night the score was like 9-0, and he stole 3 bases.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that. I was just going to say that. There used to be a rule, a golden rule. One of the big golden rules was, if you're ahead in a ball game, 5, 6, 7, 8 runs, you do not try to steal bases. You don't try to steal second. You don't try to steal
third. And I agree with that.
Except,
I buy into that.
Except one time. I only saw it, I think, maybe once, maybe twice, but I remember the one time Cesar Tovar used to steal bases on Mickey Lolich like it was a freedom ticket to the circus.
On a left-hander.
Mickey used to throw at him. He used to throw at Cesar's legs. And, you know, good hitters, good players, you start throwing at their legs, they're going to get a little more than peeved. So he stole this next time he came up, he stole second, he stole third, and the inning was over. The next time he came up, he stole second, he stole third, and lo and behold, what do you think he stole next? Home plate. And he got up, and all he did was smile at Mickey and walk away. Mickey never threw at him again.
So anyway, when I was still living and working in Detroit, we had a guy who played briefly with the Tigers. I'm sure you guys remember him, Jerry Morales. Morales hits a home run one day at Tiger Stadium. He crosses first base, and he makes this big veer into short right field, and he comes and he crosses second. I mean, what a hot dog. And that's another unwritten rule. You hit a home run off a pitcher, and Denny's going to subscribe to this. Act like you're a professional. Just trot around the bases. Don't make fun of anybody. Act like you're a pro.
That's the way it used to be, because they would allow us, if you showboated and you wanted to show the pitcher up, the next time you came around or the next time we visited your park or you visited our park, somebody was going to get hit. And that was the only way to control it. But we didn't have a lot of, a couple of hot dogs I can think of. Reggie Jackson, when he would hit a home run, he'd stand there for 5, 6, 7, 10 seconds once in a while, flip the bat in the air or throw the bat towards his dugout. But he's the only one I really remember that did anything of a showboat style. And you know what? You can't blame him. People paid tickets to see it. And number two, he was playing in New York eventually, and
like
he became Mr. New York.
Do you like bat flips, Denny?
No, I still don't like him. I still don't like him.
I love him.
I'm not crazy about bat flips, guys. I think that's going a little too far. But to compare it to other sports again, and I'm not a big hip-hop guy, but you look at the other sports, and you look every time they dunk it in the NBA, they're pointing at somebody in the crowd. They're pounding their chest. They're inciting the crowd. In the NFL, they're trying to do a touchdown dance. They have a choreographed celebration now that's legal, where they can act like they're bowling pins in the end zone after they score a touchdown. This is the new generation, okay? And and I'm not a big guy on hot dogging, and I think the backflip is too much. But if you want to celebrate a home run and shake your fist and go crazy, to me, that's what makes baseball a better game for the youth of America, because that's the way they live now. And I'm okay with that. I don't necessarily like it, but we're all old guys. I'll concede that. So I think people need to relax about guys celebrating accomplishments in baseball and come up with the times. It's just getting a little bit crazy. If a guy celebrates an accomplishment on the field, we do it in every other sport. My buddy Mike O'Hara, who you all know, he calls me every time there's a goal in hockey, because I've been critical of the NFL guys doing all their dances. And he says, look at this. They scored a goal and they started hugging each other. You know, and he's always pointing out to me they do this in every sport, and I agree with them.
Fred, let me say something about this.
Go ahead.
That's a whole different thing. It's tradition in hockey. The other stuff isn't. When you and I, Freddie and Brandon, Denny might have been too old too, but when we played Little League Baseball, the first thing we learned from our coaches was sportsmanship. Yes. The second thing in that vein was respect your opponent. Always respect your opponent. Hockey's not disrespecting anybody when they celebrate after a goal. Neither is soccer, for that matter. The other stuff is disrespect. I don't like it.
I'll tell you the one thing that got my attention when it first happened. I didn't know how I was going to react when somebody said that Ozzie Smith was going to do a backflip. Remember when Ozzie started doing the back? I loved it. I mean, every time I saw it on the replays, whether it was ESPN or some other network, I thought it was great, not only for the guys on each club, because everybody would watch him, and the fans in the stands, they'd go nuts, just absolutely nuts. Bob?
Folks, if you've been listening to the show lately, and you better have been, then you already know that Dr. Rialdo is open again. Yeah, and he's doing what he's done for tens of thousands of Detroiters over the many years, giving them freedom from glasses, contacts, and reading glasses, such as the ones I'm wearing right now. Giving them the best vision of their lives, in other words. Most custom LASIK patients under 45 actually get better than 20/20 vision without glasses and contacts. But if you're over 45, like I am, and like a lot of you listening, you have to ask Dr. Rialdo about multifocal lens exchange. You'll see the microscopic print without reading glasses, and your far vision is going to be like high-def HD TV. This is not hype. And these surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. You get a free evaluation. You find out which procedure is going to change your life in ways you can only imagine. So you want to call Dr. Rialdo, 1-800-398-EYES, or go to RialdoEyeCenter.com and tell them No Filter Sports sent you for special discounts. Everybody in Michigan knows Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars, and in buying a Lincoln, you can demand that both the buying and service elements must be unequaled. That's why Hoot McInerney's Star Lincoln leads the field. This is an exemplary family business started by Hoot, the legendary auto giant and philanthropist. In July alone, Star got nearly 100 five-star reviews. Here are a few. A woman writes, "My entire experience was more than wonderful." Another, "The entire team from sales, business manager to service, is an example of premier customer service. And yet another, the buying process during this pandemic was made so easy at Star and so much quicker than I anticipated. Eli Zarrett has gotten 6 cars from Star, Detroit's premier Lincoln dealership. So make an appointment, another easy number to remember, 248-354-4900, or you can buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So, Freddie, it's great to have you with us today. And I want to say something. Denny, think about this. This is the first show that you and I have done together with Eli in how long? We haven't even mentioned COVID-19 yet. Isn't it refreshing? Isn't it nice that we haven't had to do that? But we have to at some point. The NFL now says it's going to consider possibilities for an NBA-style postseason bubble for the playoffs only this coming season, if they play. So the league's made no commitments. What do you guys think about that idea?
I don't know. It is what it is. And this is, you know, listen, the whole thing with the COVID, all we want to do is get some vaccination ability out there sooner or later. The sooner the better. And let's get back to things that we used to do. I'm afraid, and I just don't see us coming out of the cloud, the damn overcast that we're in right now. I don't see us coming out of this until sometime next year. I think we're going to keep masks on for almost another year. I know a lot of people don't hate them, but boy, you're protecting your neighbors when you wear them, and you need to wear them. It's just crazy when you see people going in and out of stores without them on. It's absolutely nuts. It's something you fear. You really do.
Yeah, I hate them. I hate them, guys. I hate wearing them.
We all do.
I hate wearing them, and the only reason I wear them is for other people. Yeah. I don't wear them for myself. I wear them out of respect for other people, and I think that's – but I agree with you, Denny. You know, back in March when we lost the NCAA tournament, yeah, I said, man, what has this come to? And I'm thinking, thank God, when this all clears by the fall, we'll be back to normal. I would have never thought here in – the middle of August, we're still talking about canceling seasons, postponing seasons. And by the way, I agree with Nick Saban on another paddock. I'm not sure spring football is going to work, gang. And now we're even talking about the college basketball season either being certainly to be delayed, postponed, or even canceled. I would have never believed it. I want to say on one hand, you can't run from COVID forever. And on the other hand, it's reality. And, it's a week by week, day by day process, and I just can't believe the atmosphere we're living in. I can't believe it.
Eli asked me an interesting question on the show the other day, Fred. I wear masks down here in Florida when I have to, when I'm legally obligated to inside public places, because I'm a law-abiding citizen. I have to do that. But what Eli asked me was, if NFL stadiums were full of fans this year, would I personally go to a game not wearing a mask? Yes, I would.
Oh, you would not.
Yes, I would. How about you, Fred?
No, you wouldn't.
I would too. I wouldn't. I don't wear a mask outside at all, and I would not sit at a game with them. First of all, they suffocate me. Second of all, I find them cumbersome and in an outdoor environment. And that's one of the things I can't see. I understand why they can't fill these stadiums. I don't understand why you can't put 1,000 people in there and somehow make it work.
Let me give you a statistic. I just put this on Monday. They sent a big mailer out to all of the Green Bay Packer fans. Every one of them got a questionnaire. The questionnaires came back. 80% of the fans opted out of season tickets this year because of the infection, the virus.
Well, that's so okay, too.
Can't
that's
tell okay. me that people are going to. Yes, listen, there are certain parts of this country that people will show up and watch anything without a mask. And if you guys are telling me you're going to sit there and expose yourselves, God forbid you have the virus and you don't know it. Maybe you're a carrier.
Okay, we've been over this.
Bottom line, that would be terrible to infect anybody else. Whether we've been over it again, you're telling me you'd go to the game without the mask. If I'd see you in there, and because I know you, if I saw you in there without a mask, I would come over and talk to you about it real quick, and I'd ask you to leave.
That's pretty
laugh
good.
All you want. All you want. Ray.
I just paid $200 for a ticket, and you're
don't
telling
care
me I got to leave?
There's one thing about you. You would never pay $200 for a ticket.
I'm going to side with you. I'm going to side with Bob on this one, Denny. You could come up, and you could lecture me and talk to you all I want. You didn't ask about the other fans. You asked about me and Bob. And my point is, I go into the stadium, and I'm not going to sit there and watch a 3.5-hour game with something over my face.
Right on, brother. And both of you guys who think you guys are impervious and invincible, stay home.
Okay. We can't come anyway, is it right?
Okay, you remind me of the people on the road I see. They're driving their car and they got a mask on.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Why you're driving in your car by yourself and you have a mask on.
That is crazy, isn't it? That is crazy. When I see it, I chuckle every time I see somebody.
Okay, I guess it's old time broadcasters on the show today. So I got another question for you that I gleaned off Twitter. This is from our longtime friend and colleague, Dave Llewellyn, the anchorman, news anchorman at Channel 7 in Detroit. So he asked the other day, he says, there are now two petitions circulating online that aim to have Michigan high school football played this fall, because he said they're not going to do it. Would you guys sign those petitions to go ahead and have the high school kids play if they wanted to this fall?
I would not. And Dave Llewellyn, by the way, is a college classmate of mine. We cut our teeth together.
Central.
At CMU, so we're close friends. We were there together. Yeah. We did a radio show together. We actually, it was his idea. Remember the old sports rap show? Not sports rap, the 615 Sports with Bob Reynolds back at your station at WJR.
I did that show.
That in college, and Dave and I did that show together. And
I did that show.
Yeah, you did that show.
And so,
didn't you?
And so I'm sitting at JR. Yeah. I was all of like 24, 25 years old. And I get a call, and it's some kid calling me up named Dave Llewellyn from Central Michigan. Big fan. Is there any way I could come down and meet you and just see how you work? I said, hell yes. Come on down here. That's the first time I ever met Dave. That was a long time ago.
Well, I would, with my kids, if they'd been the right age right now, I would have tried to talk them out of it, but I'd let them make their own decision at that point in time. And then additionally, by the way, just one fact, it's kind of ironic that in the state of Ohio, they're letting all the high school teams play, but OSU can't play. So, you know, there's both sides of this thing, and I don't think anybody's going to get it right. I really don't.
That's the strange part about this. I just told you I'd watch a game without a mask, but I wouldn't play a game without one. And this is, to me, where football is different than any other sport. It is a sport that, by the nature, is based on camaraderie. You're coming in, you're running in together, you're jumping all over each other, and then you have contact every play. Then you're spitting all over each other. I just think football is the one sport that you can't survive in this COVID environment.
So, go ahead.
Goodbye, WCWA in Toledo. You're listening to the No Filter Sportscast, but don't go away. Get us online. You can hear more of this lively conversation. I guess I should say it again. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So back to some of this stuff. You know, Denny and Eli and I talked on the show the other day about this medical condition. It's a heart condition that some people, medical experts, quote unquote, were saying could really hurt young people who are not going to die from COVID, but they've tested positive. So now comes an interesting story from an Alabama website the other day about a doctor named Michael Ackerman, not a college football fan, been to two games in his life. This guy has impeccable credentials. He's a Minnesota-based cardiologist, and he leads the Winland Smith Rice Sudden Death Genomics Lab, which studies, among other things, sudden death in young athletes. He told the Big 12, which is why they continued to play, told them that you can't say that they're going to get this myocardia thing or whatever it is. There's not enough evidence. There was only one study done in Germany on adults. You can't extract. He said it's a scientific foul to infer that those findings can be extrapolated and made relevant to 18, 24-year-old athletes. And this is why they're saying the SEC and the other conferences are going to play college football this year, because if the one conference, the Big 12, if they would have bowed out, then the ACC would likely have dropped out. And the SEC would have had to follow suit, essentially. So this guy, they're saying on this website, Dr. Michael Ackerman, essentially saved what college football we're going to have.
Well, let me say this. Yeah, I've got an enlarged heart. I've had an enlarged heart ever since I played ball. I don't know how that happens, but it happened. I didn't get it from any disease or illness. I don't think so anyway. But you know what? One study may not be the most convincing thing for you, but it's probably convincing for a lot of other people. When you start talking about athletes who got the virus. Remember now, they got the virus, and a lot of things happen once you get the virus, and then the heart began to enlarge. So whatever the results
he's saying that's not happening. This is a doctor. But that's
but you know what? But so are the other guys who did the test. What are they, grease monkeys in a oil jobs place? Come on, stop it, Bob.
Well, we don't know. The biggest thing is we don't know yet. We saw Eduardo Rodriguez with the Boston Red Sox. This is a young pitcher. He had to take the entire season off following his COVID-19 because there is a heart issue. However, you look at maybe Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz. He was one of the very first athletes to get coronavirus. He just dropped 90 points in the last two games in the NBA playoffs. I think fine. I'm just saying don't know. It's different
Brandon,
for everybody.
Brandon, this is not the issue. Not the issue.
But everybody is different. That's it. Everybody is different. That's all.
Right. But what the issue Brandon's is getting at here is that one of the young men had to drop out because he had a heart condition after apparently testing positive for COVID. This is not what we're talking about with this issue. This is a specific heart condition that some people said is going to affect young athletes. And this highly respected physician who's an expert in the field says, no, it's not. It's
so
okay
are the
to play.
People that did the test to begin with
in Germany.
Man, so what? What? We're not giving Germany
to over 50 people.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
People over 50.
You would know. You would know.
Yeah. I'm reading. Yeah.
It's called myocarditis. Whatever that is.
Right.
Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah, myocarditis.
Whatever it is. To me.
Yeah, whatever.
To me, in a COVID sense, what's really going to be interesting is if they pull off these seasons in college football, in the SEC and other conferences, how bad is the Big Ten going to look then if they go through the whole season unscathed and there aren't people getting sick and there aren't, you know, heaven forbid, there aren't people dying? How bad is the Big Ten and these other conferences going to look by postponing and canceling their season if these other schools can pull it off? To me, that's the interesting thing as we move forward the next 3 months is how this is going to be a tug of war and should we have or should we not have. And how is the Big Ten and the new commissioner, Kevin Warren, going to look if they jump to a conclusion and these other conferences are able to complete a season? Because I'm jumping forward to now what Nick Saban said. I don't think a spring football season is going to work. Nick Saban equates it to playing JV people. And I have said that all along. These players who are serious players, which in the SEC in particular, most of them who play are serious players, they're going to look forward to their NFL careers, and they're going to kind of play that spring season. So it's not going to be like a real college football season.
If they didn't have the opportunity to play in the NFL, they wouldn't be playing. That's as simple as it is. It's all about the money, 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 period. That's it. There is no other argument for it.
Okay, let me follow up what Fred just said. The Big 14, I like to call it the Big 13 plus Rutgers. Eli, for whatever reason, hates that. But at any rate, the Big 14 announced tough. Oops, I can't say that, Brandon. Thank you.
Oh, really?
at any rate, so the Big 14 announced on Wednesday that it will not reconsider playing football this fall, despite all the players, Michigan players and their parents making headlines, angry that nobody even asked the players whether they wanted to take the chance and play. And this is one of the things that's happened. In his first and only season as a starter for the University of Michigan on the offensive line, Jalen Mayfield was tremendous. 6'5", 320. This guy is going to be one of the great offensive linemen the University of Michigan ever produced. And that's saying a lot about
that. Bob, when are you going to learn that these organizations are run by presidents of universities? Not even the commissioners run them. The presidents run them. The commissioners are ambassadors for these different outfits. And the bottom line is, listen, I'll give you a prediction. I think the Pac-12 is going to play this year. They just hired a guy by the name of Merton Hanks, and Mr. Hanks has been the commissioner in a sense for like 7 or 8 different professional teams and college organizations, and he's been in charge of all of the football activities with these 6 or 7 or 8 different institutions. The bottom line is they've come to him for him to logistically start to look at all of the people that are involved in this at this point in time in the Pac-12, and they're going to make a decision probably based upon what I read this morning, probably in the next 30 days, maybe sooner, if they're going to play.
Let me finish this.
It's going to be unbelievable.
Let me finish. I want Fred's comments on this, but I want to finish this story.
Well, we don't care about your story. I care about my story.
What happened with Mayfield is that he announced just the other day that he's turning pro. He's not ever going to play for the University of Michigan again. And what's the kid supposed to do? Not play football for the next year? He wants to play football. Why shouldn't he leave the University of Michigan? Another casualty of the Big Ten canceling its season. Fred?
I knew you were going there, Bob, because I saw that he declared – and this is the opening. This is the can of worms. This is opening now. Who's kidding who? The student athlete term. I'm sure you guys have abused that term. They aren't student athletes. In most of these cases at big time schools like Michigan and Alabama and in the SEC and even Michigan State, these kids are prepping for the next spot in their life. I don't mean educationally. I mean athletically. Right. Most of these kids are playing big-time college football to get ready for an opportunity in the big show. And if you start canceling seasons, you're going to lose people. Mayfield has already decided there are going to be more. You look at the opt-outs before spring football starts. Spring football will not work. I am very skeptical of spring football working. Does that mean I think you should risk lives? I do think that the athlete should have some say in that. Although the litigation you're facing and the potential lawsuits and the legal ramifications are astronomical, and I'm sure that's part of what the Big Ten was considering. But you're going to lose a lot of players. They're going to opt out to pursue their NFL dreams over this phony spring season. It's not going to happen.
I don't think 19 and 20-year-olds have the ability to make that kind of a decision. Let the adults make those kinds of decisions. Let them.
You don't think they had input? Really?
Yeah, they can have as much input as they just had a whole bunch of input. They all carried hundreds of thousands of letters to Chicago to the Big Ten. What good did it do them? It did no good. And by the way, the Big Ten offices have been closed for 6 months. There was nobody there to even take the letters. So, you got to check your destinations before you make your reservations.
I think kids should have a say in it. I think when you're 19 and 20, you're old enough to do a lot of other things. And I think you should have a say in your own personal health and your own personal state. Now, what kind of say they should have, and I go back and forth because I understand why they postpone these seasons, but I don't think spring football is going to work. And who of us knows that the COVID thing is going to be over by March or February when they start playing these games? Why do we think that?
Well, the only reason they think that is because there's supposed to be a couple of vaccinations out around after the first of the year. We all hope and we pray that that's going to happen. But, you know, no one knows. No one has the crystal ball right now to tell us. But
we have, again,
the 19 and 20-year-olds, you can't let the inmates run the asylum. You cannot. Somebody much more educated, professional, and all of the other things that it takes to run a major organization. They got to make the decision. Yes, they got to explain it to the kids. Yes, they got to tell them what the downside of this thing. And the kids only have one direction. They only want to go play. They don't want to listen to an argument that says do not play.
I've mentioned this on the show before. I'm sure this must be one of many, but here in Palm Beach County, Florida, we have started testing a new vaccine to combat COVID-19. And they say that the testing will be done by November and they're going to have the results by January. So yeah. I'm with you, Denny. I mean, and Fred, I think you said the same thing. They're going to have a vaccine for this. Yeah. Okay. Life's going to go back to what it was before.
I hope. Dear God, I hope.
I agree with that. They're going to have a vaccine. I don't necessarily know if they're going to have it by January or February. I mean, sometimes they say these things take 3, 4, 5 years. God help us if it takes that long. So, yeah, there will be a vaccine, you know, like there was for the chicken pox and the measles back in the day. And for the flu, there will be a vaccine. But I think it's coming later than sooner.
Since I mentioned Palm Beach County, Florida, Denny and Eli and I had a field day with this a while ago, but really in a good-natured sense. We didn't take it that seriously. New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft's pitched legal battle fighting his misdemeanor prostitution charge scored a victory Wednesday of this week. An appeals court agreed to keep suppressed a video that was secretly recorded by police inside massage parlors. So Kraft is now free to go. He's off the hook. My longtime significant other is an attorney in New York, and one of her mentors, a top attorney there named Judd Burstein, always asked her the rhetorical question. The legal system is all about how much justice can you afford? Robert Kraft can afford a lot of justice. So he's really, we got a lot of problems here in Palm Beach County, folks, but I don't think Korean massage parlors happen to be one of them.
I hope to God we never ever see the video of Bob.
Well,
Kraft
here's my question.
I can't imagine a worse play in football than Bob Kraft being massaged by whomever is going to massage the body. And would it be a happy massage? Was he wearing a mask? I wonder too. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, to do certain things to him, the young Korean lady could not possibly have been wearing a mask, but we don't need to go there.
No, I don't think so. Okay. Although, unless we get the address.
It's not too far from me. I don't think they're open anymore though. Freddie, I don't know if you play golf. Danny's a golf wacko, as is Eli. So, Danny, now they're saying that health issues have forced Brooks Koepka to withdraw from the Northern Trust going on this weekend, and they're asking if his appearance in the United States Open is now in jeopardy. You saw him working on Koepka during the PGA Championship. I guess it was a chiropractor. He's not only had knee problems, now he's got a big hip problem. This could be serious, Danny.
He quite a player, obviously, as we all know, and he hurt it during the past year pretty good pain, and he just doesn't want to take a lot of pain pills to play the game, so he's going to take the next month off before the Open, and hopefully he'll be in a shape, because they did predict somebody in the PGA either last night or this morning. They did say that he will probably be playing the Open. The other guy that's going to play here in a very short time, remember Tiger Woods? He's going to play 4 tournaments in 5 weeks, I think, getting ready for the Open. So it's good to have Tiger in a tournament, because then a lot more people watch. The game is more exciting.
Yep.
And even if he doesn't win a tournament, at least normally the first day or two, he's on the leaderboard in some way within the top 10 or 15 guys. It's always good to see if he's going to win another one. You know, I can't believe that. And we all know he won a lot of golf tournaments quickly. But his grand total of just winnings on the tour is $94 million. Think about that. For hitting a little ball in a little cup. 94
at his age.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think Jack won for his entire career? Please.
I don't know. Yeah. But Jack has done very well.
Yeah. I love watching Tiger, and any event he's in, I am more apt to go to the television than at any other time when he's not.
Yep.
That said, I don't think you can play that sport here and there, and even 3 out of 4 weeks. And I don't think you can play 10, 12 tournaments a year and be a factor in majors. I don't care who you are, as great as he is.
Yeah,
and I think he even knows it. He's on borrowed time. The fact that he won that Masters in his condition is just unbelievable to this day. But I think he's done winning, Denny. I love watching him. If he tees it up in 10 minutes, I'm cutting this podcast short and I'm going to go watch him, okay? Because I love watching him that much. But I don't think you can win at that level when you play once in a while. I just don't think you can do it.
No, you can't. There's no – and he, by the way, they say he practiced – he's up in Maine or New England country yesterday, got up there, and he was on the practice tee yesterday for 5 or 6 hours. So he obviously is serious about doing it again if you're going to work out that much every day.
I'm sure he's serious, but I repeat, you can't play once in a while and win majors. You can compete in them for a couple of days, but I don't think you can play once in a while and win majors.
I agree.
We got a lot more coming up on the show for you folks, including a mush softball question I'm going to throw to Fred Heumann to have him hit out of the park. We also have, of course, This Day in Sports. I'm going to do it, and it pertains to Danny McClain, and our weekly mailbag featuring you, the listeners. I want to tell you now about Feldman Automotive, which is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer with 5 locations: Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman, in fact, has 9 locations total. They've also got Feldman Hyundai in New Hudson, Feldman Kia in Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven, and Michigan's top-rated pre-owned supercenter in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. You buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, then relax with Feldman's exclusive Drive It for 3 Days, Love It or Bring It Back guarantee. It's a can't-lose proposition for you. And then Feldman also adds this, an exclusive guaranteed credit approval. We're proud and confident that you can find what you need and what you want at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Let them earn your business. At the same time, support our show. You can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com, hassle-free or at home or in the showroom. We also encourage you to consider Power Home Solar, America's fastest growing solar energy company. All of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels are made right here in America. With solar energy, you save money, you help save the environment, and also help yourself avoid those costly and incredibly infuriating power outages. This is because Power Home Solar is partnered with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. With Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for all your in-home energy needs. Yeah, you'll lower your energy bills, you'll eliminate power outages forever. Owner Jason Waller and Power Home Solar have financing that starts at just $99 a month. You call them at 1-800-POWER-90, and you'll even save an additional $1,800. So, here's the back to the show, the mush softball I've got for you right now. I just want your comment. News item, Wednesday, Oscar De La Hoya told ESPN that he will return to the ring at the age of 47.
He's going to fight you.
Is your name Freddie?
No, but he's going to fight you.
Give me a break. Maybe he should line up against Mike Tyson, who's also talking about a comeback.
Not,
right?
Not the same weight class.
47. What did I just say about? Yeah. What did I just say about Tiger Woods? You can't play golf every once in a while and be effective, and you can't box once every 12 years and be effective. It's got to be a publicity stunt. Now you followed his career more closely than I did because you and Eli are more boxing guys than me and Denny are. But how can you fight at age 47 unless you're fighting me, you, Denny, and Eli? Who the hell are you going to beat up at age 47?
And he could fight all of us at the same time and win. That's the kicker. But I don't
know. That's what I meant. I meant that, by the way, all four of us.
Would anybody pay to see him fight? I can't imagine paying $75 or $100 to watch him fight.
You have to be licensed to fight.
Yeah,
this is a state-regulated industry. Why would you license a 47-year-old man to have a prize fight who hasn't fought in 12 years?
Yeah, you're right.
I guess not Nevada would.
I got a crazy story here. Ready? About a year ago, the Navy SEALs were working with their canines, and they had a guy all dressed up, and he had a Colin Kaepernick jersey on, and the dogs were attacking the guy wearing the Colin Kaepernick jersey. Finally, after the attack, and it went on apparently for quite some time, the guy who was wearing the jersey and all the equipment, by the way, so the guy wouldn't get his neck torn off, he said, "Hey, man, I'll stand for the national anthem next time." So now what's happened is the upper echelon of the Navy SEALs found out about it. Now they're investigating all the poor Navy SEAL guys for just having a joke, a stunt, whatever you want to call. And I don't mean to disparage it or reduce but you know what? Come on. I mean, every once in a while, you got to have a laugh or two. And don't we take advantage of everybody when we make stories about people? We criticize in a funny way, humor, things like that. It just gets me when people go so crazy. And I realize the SEALs are a monster operation, but I just see nothing wrong with it. I'm sorry.
I'm more surprised that Colin Kaepernick hasn't gotten a contract offer by now.
Me
He's
too.
Still not practicing with an NFL team. What does that tell you?
Yeah. Well, it's no laughing matter that the Navy SEAL, who actually was the one who killed Bin Laden, got into big trouble this week because he refused to put a mask on during a plane flight that he was taking. That's wrong. If the rules say put the mask on, you got to put the mask on.
Yep.
Boy, I feel.
I wear a mask out of respect to other people. And the fact, even though I don't like it, it's the law. When somebody in an establishment wants me to wear a mask or says I have to wear a mask, who am I to say no? I was in a restaurant yesterday at lunch and a man walked in and the waitress chased him all the way. Denny, you've been in the establishment in Lansing with me. We've had lunch there. Chased him all the way to his table.
Hooters.
He just kept shaking his head. He refused to put a mask on, and they threw him out of the place.
Good.
And I don't understand why people are so hell-bent about, you know, I don't like him either. But if it's the law or an establishment asks you to do it, what is the big problem? Just put the darn thing on.
I agree. Totally agree. The mask will never calm down. Absolutely not.
Until we have a cure.
Rules are the rules. You got to follow the rules. That's all. Fred is right. You got to follow the rules.
Yep. Yep. So now we come to a point of this program that we don't do on every show. I hate having to do it. I hate it. And this is our necrology. So I want to throw out three names this week. Dale Hawerchuk dies of stomach cancer at 57. Mm. What a great player he was with the Winnipeg Jets. 518 goals in 1,181 NHL games. Elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame in just his second year of eligibility. Last week, a couple guys Danny knows. Carroll Hardy. We all had his baseball cards as kids. The Red Sox outfielder was the only man ever to pinch hit for Ted Williams, who in truth got hurt. He died last week, football, baseball, track star at the University of Colorado. But the cool thing we thought about Carroll Hardy, we all knew it, he played one season in the NFL too, 1955 for the 49ers. He became part of the Denver organization later on, and of course that spawned a whole generation of guys like Dion and Bo coming up who did play multiple sports. He died at 87. And Danny, you had a lot of battles with Horace Clark, the former Yankees outfielder. He passed away the week before. Tell us about Horace.
Good player, good guy. Played his butt off, and just one of those guys that could play for anybody at any time, and you know he would not let you down. He was one of those, and he'd get into a streak once in a while, get himself in a series and get 8, 10, 12 hits in a series. When he got hot, he was hot, as hot as anybody I ever saw. And but he was a good guy, really a nice man, really a nice. I've done a number of shows with him, and he was always as good as you could be with the crowd. Yeah, and people really appreciated him.
And maybe the most unusual New York Yankee ever. He never played in the World Series because Horace Clark was part of some really mediocre and bad ball clubs with the Yankees back then.
I remember Horace Clark as a switch-hitting second baseman who seemed to beat up the Tigers all the time. It seemed like he got a bunch of big hits against the Tigers. But you're right. The first thing I thought of is how much bigger would his name be if he hadn't played for some miserable Yankee teams. That was the one era in really our lifetime when the Yankees were really bad. After their run in the 50s and 60s, they were terrible in the late 60s and the 70s. In fact, when Mickey Mantle retired, as you know, Denny, those were some bad, bad Yankee teams, weren't they?
They sure were. And in 68, when Mantle was in his last year, the ball club was just bad. I mean, they didn't hit the ball very well. They didn't play the game very well. It just looked like a bunch of guys hanging around waiting to retire. And of course, then Tommy Tresh wound up here in Michigan coaching baseball. What a good man he was. What a terrific guy Tommy Tresh was.
Yeah, we got to talk to Fred about Michigan State and about Central. Yeah. A couple more things. First of all, as you know, Eli likes to do his This Day in Sports. So, you know, I'm here. I thought I'd do the same. I found it hard looking at the various websites which post this kind of stuff. Way too much happened on This Day in Sports, August 20th. Not a lot particularly interesting to me, but this was posted by Denny McLean's assistant on Twitter today, This Day in Sports. 1965, Denny McLean throws a three-hit shutout against the Red Sox at Fenway. Tigers win 2-0. 67, Denny beat the Cleveland Indians 4-2 for his 16th win. 1971, Denny again got a complete game win as his not-beloved Washington Senators beat the Royals 6-3. Denny, do you remember anything about those games?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
So, Freddie, I see that Joel Ferguson now announced on Thursday that he's resigning as Michigan State trustee. I think most of us know how much he meant to the university or how powerful he was. Did you like him? Did overall he do a good job at Michigan State? Why do you think he's leaving now? And what's the board going to be without Joel Ferguson?
Well, I think part of it is age. I think he's getting up there in years. I think part of it is the criticism he has faced, the comments he made on actually a local radio show here a couple of years ago about the Nassar situation has haunted him. He's been getting hammered over that. In terms of your other question, did I know him and like him? You know, one of the first people that called me when I lost my job 10 months ago was Joel Ferguson. He had me to his office twice. He wanted to hand my resume out. He tried to get me hired at Michigan State. So personally, he was very, very good to me. That said, he got himself in a lot of hot water with some of his loose-lipped comments. And I think I think his time has probably come where, you know, what is he? He's over 80 now, isn't he? And I think at that point in time, like George Perlis, I love George Perlis, God rest his soul, but I thought he stayed on the board too long. And I think Joel's time is probably up with that. So I don't have a problem with that. But you talk the power You talk the power he had at the university. It's unbelievable the power he had here. And whether you liked him or not, and a lot of people didn't like him, he had a big say in a lot of things that went on here at Michigan.
Oh, that's good, Freddie. Now give your dog a bleeping milk bone to shut him up, please. So let's continue on. Let's continue on with this then.
Did you hear that? I'm sorry. Hey, shut up. Mom doesn't know you.
So obviously you knew Nasser. Just take it away, Freddie.
I didn't know Larry Nasser.
He didn't know Larry Nasser.
You did not know Nasser.
Everyone thinks that all these coaches and all the personnel at Michigan State had this personal relationship with Larry Nasser and knew him very well. That's not necessarily true. I'm not sure that a lot of prominent coaches ever even met the guy. They knew of his reputation. I never met the guy. I never interviewed him. I've never come in contact with him. I know that he had a reputation that was nation and worldwide, and the medical people who I have spoken to since the Nasser mess came up have sworn to me that they worked closely with him and knew nothing about any of this behavior that had now has him in prison. They knew nothing about it. This guy didn't only fool the public, he fooled his co-workers who worked right alongside him. Now, we can sit here and debate how much President Simon knew, and we can debate how much Kathy Klages, the gymnastics coach who was fired over this, and the other coaches knew. But I'm telling you, I've talked to people that work right alongside Larry Nasser. I've talked to coaches. There's a former Michigan State coach who took his daughter there because he was so worldly renowned. And I said, how did it go? He says, everything was on the up and up. Everything was perfect. There were no incidents. So this guy had a great reputation, but he fooled a lot of people. And I'm telling you, he fooled people that worked right alongside him.
You mentioned George Perlis. You covered and knew almost all of them. So let me ask you what Nick Saban was like and what covering him as a reporter was like.
Well, I had a rare good relationship with Nick Saban when he was here. We hit it off, and I'd go in his office all the time, and you know, I could do any interview I wanted with him. He was a little misunderstood. He used to tell me all the time, people think that I'm so gruff and so serious. He actually had a personality. I think you've seen a little bit of on ESPN now that he's become more famous. I think when you see, you know, we think of the tyrant on the sidelines and what he does to players, and he physically handles players and all that. But the guy has a dynamic personality. The guy can be a lot of fun. And I actually liked him here. And I think it's, you know, obviously one of the big mistakes Michigan State ever made is letting him go because he wanted $100,000 more. But he wouldn't have stayed here anyway. He was up for bigger and better things, and he wouldn't have stayed at Michigan State.
Why doesn't a guy like that wind up in the NFL? I always wondered.
He did. Well, he went to the Dolphins. He failed.
He did.
He failed, though. I mean,
went to the Dolphins.
But why didn't I understand that? But why does a guy like that fail in the NFL level? I just don't understand it. The guy wins everywhere. He's won everything in his life, everything he's touched, and yet he could not handle real men, adults.
He'd get mad if I said this, but probably for the same reason that Tom Izzo, who I guess was on your show a couple of weeks ago, from what I hear. Same reason Tom Izzo's style wouldn't work at that level. Izzo hates when I or anyone else say that, but I don't think that kind of intensity, that minute to minute day on pounding, which a lot of college kids need, the pros don't need that, and they resist it, and they rebuke it, and they resent it. And that kind of style doesn't work in the NFL. It just doesn't. And it doesn't work in the NBA. It just does not.
You see the thing with Joe Judge, the Giants' new head coach? So he's in his first padded practice on Monday. Guys make mistakes. Joe Judge, never been a head coach, out of Mississippi State as an assistant. Of course, he's been with Belichick with New England. Judge makes some professional athletes, not just four New York Giants, run laps for mistakes. He made two of his assistant coaches run laps. Ever heard of such a thing in your life? A lot of times these college guys, like Saban, just aren't cut out, as you say, Freddie, to be pros.
No, they're not, and he's not going to last there if he does that. Somebody told me the other day, in fact, he was talking about Jim Boylan, who was the coach of the Chicago Bulls, a former Izzo assistant.
Sure.
He just got fired, and he said, this is an area coach here who knew him well, and he says that style, he said to me, that style will not work in the NBA. Boylan was the same way, hard driver, making everyone accountable. And this person said to me, what do the great coaches have in common? And I was stumped. I tried to think of all the technical things. He says, they coddle their athletes. And that may be a difficult thing to absorb or accept, but he says the great coaches have learned how to coddle their athletes. Who was better at it than Chuck Daly? Remember, I mean, he's one of the great coaches in NBA history, and he had a bunch of misfits on that team. But he found a way. Chuck used to say all the time, the older I get, the worse my eyesight gets, and the harder I become of hearing. He was able to filter that stuff out and mold that team into champions, and he just ignored all the crap with Dennis Rodman, all the crap with players sleeping with each other's wives, all the stuff that went on with those Pistons team, he was able to filter out because he knew how to handle pro athletes. Not every coach can do that.
Well, the thing, too, is the athletes in the NBA took over the NBA a long time ago. It's like the asylum is being run not by management anymore. It's being run by the people who play the game. Maybe good, maybe bad, but it's I don't think I've ever seen the NBA in better shape. I would love to see their ratings get better. Because they had monster ratings when they started playing again the first week or 10 days, and now they got, horrible ratings right now in the NBA. And I don't understand why. I just don't.
And when Black Lives Matter. A lot of people don't like it, Denny. Go ahead, Brandon.
One final thing. I just kind of wanted to close the door on the Nick Saban situation, because I always hear about Nick Saban, you know, such a great collegiate quarterback and so terrible in the pros. But I got to tell you, if I ever become a NFL head coach.
You won't.
If I ever do, and my two quarterbacks in my two seasons are Joey Harrington and Gus Frat, and I finish second place and then last place, I'd hope you guys wouldn't call me a super failure. If you give this guy one, two, maybe three more years, and hell, maybe a quarterback or some players that don't smoke weed like Ricky Williams, this guy could have been a fantastic pro coach. I just think that once he found his groove in 2007 with Alabama, you got a better gig than the pros.
Look, I don't agree with this. It's something that I thought Freddie was going to bring up, and we should have brought this up. You look at Tom Izzo. We all love Tom and the amazing recruiting year he's having at Michigan State right now and all the recruiting in the past. You look at Coach K. You look at Nick Saban at Alabama. The one thing they all have in common is they're great recruiters. You can't recruit in professional sports. You got to take what the draft gives you, and that's why they're not as successful, or in Mike's case and in Tom's case, why they don't even want to try.
Gentlemen, one thing about all of the games, talent replaces everything. If you got a great talent, you got a pretty good coach, you're going to do a lot of good
things. Yeah, and in college, you can recruit. In college, you can recruit great talents, not in the NFL, not in the pros.
Are you telling me that if Bill Belichick would have had Joey Harrington instead of a guy named Tom Brady, he'd be, you know, successful? Because that's what we're talking about with Nick Saban. We're talking about you're only as good as your players sometimes, and if you only have 2 years, how the hell are you going to recruit? He had no time to recruit talent at a pro level. He had two measly years. Right now, I think he has the greatest head coaching gig in all of sports. He is a god in Alabama. He is paid like it. This guy's got no regrets, if you ask me.
Just one bit of insight on Izzo, and not many people know this. Everyone talks about how close he came being the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers some 15 years ago. There was actually a closer shot that he hasn't publicized, and I think I can share this now, and that's the job of the Detroit Pistons. When they offered it to Stan Van Gundy, they offered it to Izzo first, and he turned it down. And I can tell you that at a later time, Van Gundy told him, "What, are you crazy?" And these other NBA coaches have told Izzo. They've told him, "Hey, you go to practice, you do the media thing, you get ready for the games. By 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you're out on the golf course." Izzo is never on the golf course. He's given the game up, basically, because he doesn't have time. The demand on college coaches is incredible, and I think Izzo regrets not taking that Piston job about 7 years ago.
Does Imoni Bates ever play a game for Michigan State?
I don't believe so. No, I don't think he will. I don't think he will. He'll go right on to the next level. But that's still a coup for Michigan State and for Izzo that a guy of that caliber would commit to Michigan State. That sends the message. I don't think it's coincidence that these other recruits have fallen in line after Imoni Bates committed first. I think these kids want to go and play with the best, and I think that had a ripple effect in recruiting, and that's why, in part, why he's had such a fabulous recruiting year.
Fred, your impressions all the years covering Mark D'Antonio, what was he like, and what do you think of Mel Tucker and what's going on with Michigan State football now?
I don't know Mel Tucker very well at all. I haven't even met him yet because I had lost my job right before he is named, and I've not had reason to be over there. I think he's done pretty well in recruiting. I think he brings a lot of energy. I think D'Antonio doesn't get enough credit for being a home run hire at Michigan State. He had his foibles. He was a little stubborn. He had his conservative offense. But you look at the glory he brought that school in the time he was there with the two appearances in the Big Ten, three appearances in the Big Ten championship game, with the Rose Bowl in 2013, with the way he stood up to Michigan, which was the most important thing he ever did, was standing up to Mike Hart that year when Hart called you the when Hart called Michigan State our little brothers in a game after they just beat Michigan State, and Mark D'Antonio had the guts to stand up to Michigan, and he said at a press conference, "How long around here are we going to bow down to the University of Michigan?" And he said, "You tell Mike Hart that we're here. It's not over. It's never going to be over." And then he succeeded to kick Michigan's butt in about six of the next 8 years. That comment and his reaction to Michigan, because Michigan, and you know, Bob, had kicked beach sand into the face of Michigan State for many, many, many years, and with good reason. And D'Antonio said, enough is enough. And he backed up his words with his team's performance. He motivated the program to make Michigan the number one priority. And they adopted that theory. They followed D'Antonio's lead. And it's the most important thing that's happened to Michigan State football in 50 years. The fact that they can now stand toe to toe to Michigan. And I give D'Antonio most of the credit for that.
I would hope so, because man, he's done a hell of a job there with everybody, the recruiting and the way he's managed those kids. I think it's been outstanding for a long time. Nice man.
We're running out of time. I know I had told everybody we want to talk about your alma mater, Central Michigan. You got just a brief comment on what's going on there, what kind of shape the football and basketball programs are in?
Well, they liked their basketball program. They think they have a coach now that's going to stay there a while and not move on. Their football program was so down, and then they hired Jim McElwain, who has SEC background, and that seemed to have been a home run hire too. He was actually an assistant at Michigan State back under John L. Smith, believe it or not. I knew McElwain in those years, and I saw him here recently. In fact, I saw him at George Perlis's funeral, and we reminisced a little bit. But he has been a good hire there. The big fear was he was going to leave after 1 year, but he took a program that the former Lions assistant just seemed to decimate and built it right back up into 1 year. But, you know, the MAC is what it is, and Central Michigan is what it is. Part of their problem is they have to play the big boys to get these paydays, right? They get enormous paydays that pays for the whole season. It's the reason they had to cancel the season, because they lost all those premier games and those big paydays, but they have those big paydays and they get beat 52-3. And there's an imbalance there that I don't like, but I think they seem to be on firm footing with McElwain. But as Central has found out over the last three decades, any coach that has any success moves on, because they just can't pay him, and that he'll probably eventually move on to.
Now time for our mailbag segment, and Mr. Zero is not here to rush me through it, but Mr. McLean might, so it's not very long. Everybody hold tight, okay? Here we go. You can tweet us at Eli Zero, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. Here's Michigan alumnus Jim Jones, who tweeted about our Rich Stringer interview on the last show. Rich Stringer's why I wore number 71 in high school. He idolized him. Robbie in Arizona about Stringer. I especially like the parts when Rich referred to back to various No Filter Sports podcast episodes he'd heard with Brandy, Stan Edwards, and Eric Hipple. Good listener, big fan of the show. And Denny, think about this, and Freddie. An interesting thought from Robbie. Tigers are going through the White Sox and Indians buzzsaw. Will the Tigers win a single game before Eli Zarrett comes back from vacation on Monday?
Oh, what a good question. I don't know. they just are so far overmatched. It's incredible. They get behind so quick.
Yes, they will. They'll win today.
Thursday afternoon as we take this.
You mean the White Sox are playing today?
They got a Thursday afternoon.
I thought you said Cleveland.
They're playing the White Sox.
Well, they're playing the Indians.
They're going to squeeze one out. And they're going to kick a couple more before Eli comes back. But they are what they are. They're the worst team in their division.
Okay, so how about this, Denny? He writes, Gardy looks cooked. I'm ready for the guy Danny's been asking for, the big wheel. I mean, did you ask that the Tigers hire Lance Parrish to replace him now? I don't really recall that.
I have implied that I think he's the best man in the organization to run the kids. I think he knows the game better than anybody else. He can communicate with these kids. I saw how we communicated him over in Grand Rapids a number of times last year than the year before. I'm going to tell you, the guy is ready to manage in the major leagues. And you know, I was going to tell you something that he said, but I don't think I'm free to say it. But he deserves a shot at the major league level. And I suspect maybe he is the next guy. And maybe it's sooner than later, I hope.
You can email us at asknofilter@gmail.com. Norb Madison, the Grosse Pointe attorney and friend of the show, writes, back when I was a ute, as he wrote it, my grandfather would take me to amateur baseball games at Mann's Field, located on the northeast corner of Mack Avenue and Connor in Detroit. When you talk to baseball guests who grew up in Detroit, would you ask them if they have any memories of playing in Mann's Field? Supposedly, John Mayberry once hit a ball across Connor, massive. You know, Denny likes to denigrate my umpiring career, but I was umpiring the top level of amateur baseball when I was 18. Yes, at Mann's and also at Butzel Field on the other side of town. Detroit ITM, Jetbox, great amateur teams. And one day, I found out through a little blurb in one of the Detroit papers at age 18 that Paul Foitak was pitching my game that night. My God, I was so nervous. And you know what? Foitak was a great guy, by the way. He never said a word to me the whole game, except one time. I've never seen a major league slider before. That's all he had left. He threw a strike, and I kicked it. I called it a ball. He looks at me and says, where was that pitch? And I just pointed to the outside. He never said another word. Class guy. Paul's 89. He's still alive.
Yeah, I know. Look, yes. He's still with us. Yep.
Yeah. Thanks, Norb, because those
and
are
Paw,
great.
And Paw Maxwell's still with us.
Yeah, on the other side of the state. Yeah. Now we welcome in Dan Pasolacqua. Says, kudos to Brandon for standing up to Denny regarding the 20-game suspension for the Houston Astros coach Alex Cintron. MLB made it clear they wanted to avoid bench-clearing brawls. The game today is not being played in a vacuum. We're deep into a worldwide pandemic, and maintaining social distance is paramount to stopping the spread. Under normal circumstances, a 20-game suspension might be overkill. Not now. Cintron looked like the fool for jawing at a player actually in the game. I wish the commissioner would have sent him home for the season. Brandon, don't let the old guys bully you. Do we bully
should,
you?
Should the manager not defend his players? Is that where we're at now? That's the appropriate thing to do in this environment? Managers got to defend his players.
I don't see that as a defense. He was challenging a guy who had just gotten hit for the third time. He was challenging him to a fight, pulling up his pants. Screw that. Who the hell is Cintron anyway? This isn't like it's Biggio or it's some Astro of the past. This is just some turd who wants to make this all about himself and scream at a guy who just got plunked for the third time. And we talked unwritten rules of the game earlier in this broadcast. When a guy gets hit three times, should you be the one that's talking crap to him now? No.
I
you
hit
don't
Frank
Robinson
in my career.
Not to mention that Cintron questioned his mother's sexuality. That's right. What really set the rattle off.
Well,
that's probably because he made a lewd comment about his mother.
That's not the nicest thing to say at that point in time. But you know what? I guess the kids today call it street cred. Maybe he was looking for street cred in front of his 60 players at that point in time. But you can't scream and holler at him because he was defending his players. I mean,
did I hear you just start to say that you once hit Frank Robinson three times in a game?
Three or four times, in my career.
Four times in one game?
No, not one game. No. Over 10 years. Yeah.
I hated him
to come up.
Laureano got hit twice during that game and once the game prior. And so when you hit Frank Howard three times, did your manager just start screaming at him, going, hey, you deserve that, plus your mom's a whore? No, he didn't, because that wasn't respectful.
The manager of the club, 5 games, 6 games, maybe 10.
He's not the manager.
But 20 is way too many. Although, I will tell you this. Despite the 20-game suspension, he's standing down in that dugout somewhere, giving still the orders to the club every day.
He's not the manager.
He's a coach. He's not the manager. He's a coach.
Coach, right.
Yeah, he's a coach. So, is that it?
No, it's not. Now you're Eli Zeriting me. It's not almost up. We're almost done. Bill Vincent writes, I just signed up for a $5 a month donation. My son, Alex, who lives in Chicago, is a faithful listener to you guys. Turned me on to the podcast. Old school sports talk radio from three of the greatest. But Bob, let Denny talk once in a while. Now, I only want an impartial source here, Bill. Brandon, do I not let Danny McLean talk once in a while?
No comment.
Thank you, Brandon. I will let you into the house for the sale free. You won't have to pay.
Hey, did you guys know that Alex Cintron once hit over 10 home runs once in 2003? Yeah, yeah. Aside from that, his season high was 8. This guy's a nobody, Denny.
Thank you, Brandon.
I'm sorry. I don't like the guy. I apologize.
What we do have is becoming very obvious to me, finally.
Yes, well, as Fred Heumann has sat back and watched on his initial appearance on the show, we do have disagreements sometimes among us. We really
Come on,
do.
Give us the rest of this. Come on.
I will. And I want to mention also that if you want to donate to the show as well, you just go to our website. And there's a button there for you to click, and we really appreciate that. You can also call and leave a message, or you can text us at 760-89-BALLS. Here's the last one for you today. Good question, in fact, from Alero in Detroit. Well, Danny, most of this stuff is directed at you. Do you get tired of talking to our fans? I hope not.
No, not at all.
Okay, fine. So Alero says, of course, how excited he was to see Casey Mize. This is before last night's game. He says, I can't recall a pitcher as touted as he is since Verlander. And of course, JV panned out very well. Yep. Danny, what other Tigers pitchers, and directed to me and Freddie as well, do you guys remember ever coming up with this kind of hype? And what are the stats on whether they turned out to be any good or not?
No, I mean, we think about Jack Morris. We think about Mark Fidrich. We think about the one relief pitcher. What's his name? The Tigers relief pitcher that was so good for the left.
Well, you know about Willie Hernandez.
Yeah, Willie Hernandez.
There wasn't the hype about these guys.
Well, yeah, well, no, that's what I'm saying. None of them received hype. When we played, there was no hype. You just took your turn when you got there, and when they decided that you were going to finally pitch or play in a ball game, there was no big deal about it. I mean, they didn't do specials before the game and featured you since you were a baby boy hitting in the little leagues and things like that. They did none of that. I mean, it was just plain up black and white baseball.
Zumaya, so, though. Hey, remember Zoom?
Yeah,
Zoom.
Last night was a like a television demonstration promotion, not only for the Tigers but certainly Casey Mize. And of course, listen, maybe deservedly so. He's had a ton of hype. I wish he'd have pitched better. I wish things would have worked out for him last night. I wish he'd have got the win, but not to be. But he'll win a ball game. Just wait.
The three names that I come up with in recent times that got, I don't know if it's this kind of hype, but similar hype, where the left-hand pitcher, Justin Thompson, who ended up playing for Texas and fizzled out, never had the career anyone thought he'd have in Detroit or anywhere else. If you remember Andrew Miller, the left-hand pitcher who was a starter and went in the Miggy trade, became one of the premier relievers in all of baseball. He was highly hyped, but never made it as a starter. And who can forget Matt Anderson, who ended his career basically with an octopus throw in a promotional appearance at Comerica Park. Matt Anderson was this flamethrower. Yeah. He could throw it by anybody, but never made any kind of impact in the major leagues. And his most famous throw was throwing an octopus before a game. He hurt his arm or shoulder, and that ended his career.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But on that note, too, Joel Zumaya, who had a great one season with us.
But again, no hype. We're not talking about great pitchers. We're talking about the hype with their major league debut.
There was a ton of hype there. I also remember type with Jared Washburn. I remember Leland kept talking about Jared Washburn. He's going to be the greatest.
But the hype when they finally came up. So what Freddie said about Andrew Miller, you know, he wanted too much money coming out of North Carolina, where he was the greatest college pitcher in the country. So he fell to number 6. So, and then Porcello was taken the year after, only 27th overall. And here's another name for you, Fred. Jacob Turner was the 9th player taken overall in the draft, and he really hasn't panned out either. So, no, it's a good question. There's never been any pitchers come up to Detroit with this kind of hype.
Hype doesn't make your career.
Right.
I thought he looked pretty good last night, but we're praising a guy who threw 4 1/3 innings, and we've seen all these pitchers in the past that have come up highly hyped. Can't miss is the worst term in baseball. Can't miss means you can. So let's see where it goes with Mize.
Freddie, you were terrific today. It's good to see you, man. And
Fred, good to see you. Thank you very much. You were a monster. You're beginning to look like a monster.
Thanks for the opportunity to do this, because I haven't worked in 10 months and I forgot how good I looked on camera. So,
lovely wife I said hello. You hear?
Yeah. All right, Fred. Thanks.
We want
everybody to have a great weekend, or as good a weekend as possible. Stay safe. Eli's back in the host chair on Monday, and we hope to see you then. Thank you, everybody.
Everybody stay safe. Please wear that mask. Bye-bye.